And a very good morning to you. How you doing? It's 11 o'clock Sunday morning, the 4th of October, 2020. It's been a miserable weekend here in the Northwest. It's done nowt else but rain. It is me, the BBG. We're going to be looking through the Sunday newspapers. You know the drill now. And we'll eavesdrop on the Andrew Marr and Sophie Rich programmes as well. Welcome to Sunday View. Do get in touch via Twitter. It's at Richie Allen Show there.
It's the BBG, not the BBC. You're listening to the Richie Allen Radio Show, live from Salford in Greater Manchester.
It's the Richie Allen Show, broadcasting live on richieallen.co.uk and multiple platforms around the world. And now, here's your host, Richie Allen.
Ah, sure, Sunday mornings wouldn't be the same without a bit of Sunday View, eh? Eh? Lot of happy faces around Salford this morning. The rugby league team, the Salford Red Devils, defeating Warrington yesterday afternoon. An amazing thing. Salford getting to its first ever, well, not first ever, its first Challenge Cup final in 51 years. I watched the game myself and I enjoyed it immensely. As a recent convert to rugby league. Yeah, I love the sport now. Happy days. The final in 2 weeks, although whether any of the Salford fans will be able to make the journey to London to support their team, and the Leeds fans as well, it must be said, who they will play in the final. Well, it's anybody's guess. Anybody's guess. Congratulations, Salford Red Devils. Come here and I tell you, I had an argument yesterday. This is true. I had an argument with a woman in Salford, a disabled lady, a wheelchair-bound disabled lady, whom I know because I would bump into her from time to time. She has a helper dog that accompanies her everywhere, a beautiful golden Labrador. And I like this woman a lot, and I like bumping into her. And we had a bit of an argument. And it was about the COVID restrictions and my feelings on the restrictions and my beliefs, which I don't need to get into with you because you know them if you listen to this garbage often enough. You know how I feel. I think you and I, you and me and you, I think we have similar, but we think similarly on what's been happening. So I got into a bit of an argument with her because we were talking about what's been going on. And I gave my opinion because it was solicited. I was asked. I said, well, this is my opinion. And she wasn't happy at all, very unhappy, and kind of got a bit angry at the idea that I would be flippant or blasé about the health and the well-being of others. Basically, I should be all in favour of lockdown and restrictive measures, COVID measures, because it's for the greater good, for the good of everybody, and for the good of vulnerable people like her, she told me. I've never seen her as particularly vulnerable. Now, you know I'm no virtue signaller, and I grew up around a lot of people with disabilities because for some years my family were involved in the Irish Wheelchair Association. I never saw her as a victim or vulnerable. In fact, I would often see her from a distance and be incredibly moved by her attitude to life, you know. I often think of that D.H. Lawrence poem, you know, I never saw a wild thing sorry for itself. You know the poem anyway. But she got properly cheesed off because I was saying, listen, it's insane for anybody to say that the right thing to do or the thing to do is to get people, healthy people, to give up their lives, to put themselves in serious jeopardy, not only economic jeopardy, obviously, but to put them in danger from a health point of view. It's insane to declare that to be the right thing to do. Oh, we've got to protect some people that might be vulnerable to a virus. I know she got properly cheesed off. We didn't part on bad terms, which is always good. We parted on good terms. But I did say one thing to her, because she said we're all in it together, basically. We have to look at that bigger society stuff. And I said, that's fine. So if I miss a mortgage payment then, or two, because of the situation I might find myself in, will you be chipping in? Will you be chipping in? I didn't get any answer to that. Welcome to Sunday View. Going to take a tune as we always do to kick off when we come back looking at the front pages of the newspapers. Sunday morning, October 4th, 2020. I do look forward to your tweets as well. Get them in to me. It's at Richie Allen Show. You can tweet me about absolutely anything, all right? So we'll kick off with Dire Straits then this morning. Right, we better crack on then. Dire Straits there, Mark Knopfler and Walk of Life on the Richie Allen Radio Show. I didn't do a marvellous job of explaining that argument I had. Ultimately, the gist of it was, from her point of view, that somebody with my opinion, I would be a pretty horrible person, basically. Somebody that would quite happily allow people to be sick or to die, that I have a kind of, well, I'm all right, Jack, screw you attitude, which is kind of gaslighting. It's what they've been saying since day one. But that's nonsense, of course. It's total nonsense. My argument is, and will remain, how can you ask somebody to give up their lives, to effectively give up their lives, to give up their livelihoods, to give up all notion of joy, happiness, freedom of movement, freedom of expression, just in case, to do that, lest somebody else get a virus? It's insane. But the opinion seems to be the majority opinion. Because when I walk around, whether it be Salford, whether it be Manchester, and I ask people, and I do ask people, I very rarely mention the radio show or the media, the majority opinion seems to be, sadly, it's the right thing to do. We have to protect people. And it doesn't matter what I say. When I say, well, you're in danger of losing your job, yeah, you've told me that your partner isn't doing well mentally. He or she isn't getting on well with what's happening. He or she is losing their job as well. Yeah. But it's a good idea because it might prevent some old person getting a virus. Yeah. Yeah is the answer. It's astonishing. Let's look at the front pages of the papers. The Observer. Fears grow for Trump's health amid chaos over election plans. You're probably following this. I'm not going to cover it today. I couldn't care less about Donald Trump and coronavirus. I'm not interested in it. Sunday Telegraph, same headline. Same story. Trump given oxygen as vital signs are concerning. Sunday Times, Trump gambles on radical new drugs to beat the virus. Speaking from the hospital where he's currently staying, Trump talked about drugs, the antiviral drug Remdesivir and all of that. This is all over the place this morning. Sunday Express asks the question, just how ill is President Trump? Sunday Mirror front page, Trump, will I die? Allegedly, Trump asking the question, will I die, after a long time friend of his passed away, allegedly from COVID, back in March or April, I can't remember. I don't care. Yes, the interweb, social media, the Twitter pages, the Facebook pages of millions of people, conspiracy theories, QAnon and all of that. I'm not denigrating conspiracy theories now. Don't get excited. All this stuff about, are they trying to kill Trump? Paul Craig Roberts, the great Paul Craig Roberts, it must be said, sent me a link to an article on his website this morning, paulcraigroberts.org. Is Trump being assassinated by his wrongful COVID treatment? This is monumental bollocks. It is monumental bollocks. It is distraction theatre. Nobody's trying to kill Donald Trump. Nobody. Trump is a neocon Zionist wet dream. He's done everything that they, the hidden hand, them, the big T, the elite, everything they asked of him. Now, might there be some other agenda going on there? Might somebody want to ferment social disorder, violence, in order to, I suppose, roll out the inevitable martial law. Maybe, I don't know, but Donald Trump is not any secret agent bringing down the deep state. He's a Zionist wet dream, Donald Trump, so I'm not getting into it, even though I just did get into it. Dreadful. Nonsense, this. Mail on Sunday, Boris's dad broke his mum's nose. This is a new biography of Prime Minister Boris Johnson, written by a guy called Tom Bauer. And the Mail on Sunday is given this autobiography, excuse me, biography of Boris Johnson. Well, it's given it a big push today. 12 pages of the newspaper dedicated to this new biography. The allegation is back in the 1970s, Stanley Johnson assaulted his wife and broke her nose. He has not responded to any calls to comment this morning. 13 minutes past the hour. The Conservative Party conference this week, it's conference season. It's all virtual now, as you're probably aware, because of this COVID nonsense. You had Labour, didn't you? You had the Lib Dems. Now you've got the Conservative Party conference. Boris Johnson will address conference this week. He gave a live interview to Andrew Marr this morning on the Marr Show. Marr's first question to Boris Johnson was to ask him what message, if any, he has for the families of those who have died from COVID. And here was his answer.
Well, I have met relatives of those who have died, and my message to all of them and to all the bereaved is that they have my deepest sympathy. And I think the best thing we can do now for all those who have suffered in the course of this pandemic is to bring it to an end in the speediest possible way, whilst trying to keep our society going, keep our economy moving. And I know it's a very tough balance, but that's what we've got to do.
There's another group of people, you say speedy end, looking ahead, all those people who have created businesses that they've devoted their lives to, people who have lost their jobs and don't see other jobs coming up, looking ahead at the next 6 months with something like terror. What would you say to them?
And again, my deepest sympathies are with them too, because they do face, and they have faced, a serious uncertainty over the last few months. We've tried to deal with that as well as we can with a huge package of measures that everybody knows about, £190 billion worth of support already. We're going to continue to support businesses with the job retention bonus and all sorts of stuff to keep them through to Christmas and beyond. But in a way, Andrew, your first two questions have summed up
the dilemma
that any government faces in the course of this pandemic, and any Western democratic compassionate government. Because on the one hand, we have the imperative to save life, and it is a moral imperative to save life if we possibly can. On the other hand, we have to keep our economy moving and keep our society going. And that's the balance that we're trying to strike. And that's why we've got the package of measures now that are enforced both nationally and locally.
Nationally and locally. £190 billion thus far. And that's just on trying to keep people in work through the furlough scheme and the subsequent schemes that will come into play at the end of this month. £190 billion. Think about that and where that leads. That has to be paid back eventually, right? By who? By you. So he went on to say to Johnson, science will change the picture radically. Vaccine on the way, blah, blah, blah. Andrew Marr then says, well, it's obvious local restrictions are not working. The rates are going up in the places with the most stringent lockdown measures. Oldham, for example. Now, they squabbled about Oldham, and then they got on to Manchester. This is important, because all of these areas in the north, where they've locked down, cases haven't gone backwards, they've gone forwards, or they've increased, not decreased. So they get into Manchester. Here we go.
The city of Manchester, for instance, has been under restrictions since July. And the rate of infection on the 24th of July, when they went into restrictions, was 20.5 per 100,000 people. And it's now 205 per 100,000 people, nearly 10 times as much after 6 weeks, more than 6 weeks, of those restrictions. And I put it to you, I don't understand why these restrictions aren't working. Do you?
Well, I think that there are all sorts of factors in play. And clearly what's happened is that we've put a lot more load back onto the risk factor in the sense that we've got schools back, we've got businesses back, things are moving again in a way that they weren't during the lockdown of March and April. But we've also managed to keep hospital admissions.
This is real waffle, this. And if any of you have any intention of ever becoming a broadcaster, becoming a journalist, this is waffle. He asked him a very serious question. He asked him, why in those areas where the lockdown measures are the most strict, why have case numbers continued to go up? And the blonde feckin' goon is waffling. He must stop him and say, go back to my original question. Why impose lockdown measures? Why continue to do it when the evidence is that they do not work? But Marr doesn't do it. He allows them to waffle on.
Much, much lower than they were at that during that period. We've managed to keep the death rate down, although, you know, obviously we have to make sure that we keep it down. So the balance is...
I didn't ask you about death rates. Go back to what I asked you. I asked you why in Oldham and in Manchester, where you've imposed the most strict lockdown measures across the country, why are cases still going up? It's black and white. It proves it doesn't fucking work. That's all he has to say. It's simple. You don't even have to have gone to university to understand that as a journalist. But he lets him waffle on.
How do you ensure that places across the country continue to fight the virus effectively whilst keeping the economy moving?
Having a stroke is no excuse for this either.
And the way to do it, and you're going to lean over and
just shut him up and ask him to go back to the question. You're ruining people's lives in the Northwest. And it doesn't matter. Two cases. You fucking goon. Answer the question. That's all he has to say.
Shut me up at this point. But the way to do it, the most important thing, is to remember the guidance. Hands. Face. Space.
Shoulders. Yeah. Knees and toes. Knees and toes. Heads and shoulders. Knees and toes. And Mara just sits there.
Rule of six. Those are the crucial things. And also, Andrew, bear in mind that this you know, otherwise blissfully...
I have not edited that. He will not jump in, Mar. It's incredible.
A freedom-loving conservative government has imposed measures that would you know, amount to serious fines if you failed to comply.
Unbelievable. Ronald McDonald would have done a better fucking job than Andrew Marr. Wow. Astonishing stuff, right? I mean, you dream as a presenter, especially when you interview politicians. Now, I've interviewed 1,000 politicians over the years, and I hate them. I fucking hate politicians. So when an opportunity comes along like this, it's like all your birthdays coming together on the one day. I'm going to nail this creep. Marr just sits there. Lets him waffle on. And amazingly, not only does Marr not hammer him on the fact that the lockdown isn't working, did you see the Sunday Times this morning? I tweeted a link. In fact, I tweeted a photograph of the article because the Sunday Times is behind a paywall. Fair enough. No problem with that. Sunday Times is behind a paywall. I tweeted a link to an article which is massive. It's only effing massive. Does Marr bring it up? No. Why not? Why doesn't Marr bring it up? Fantastic bit of journalism in the Sunday Times. You know, sometimes I get people emailing me saying, you're supposed to be alternative. Why do you read the newspapers? The newspapers are part of the problem and all that. Listen. There are diamonds in the rough. There are still journalists at the Times, at the Telegraph and at the Mail on Sunday who are still doing their job. Outstanding bit of journalism from the Sunday Times. They have managed to gain access to a raft of emails which demonstrate clearly, unequivocally, that in wealthy, affluent areas down south where COVID-19 rates are far fucking higher than Oldham and Manchester, no lockdown at all. One of them being the Chancellor's own seat. It's a massive revelation, this, in the Sunday Times. This is huge. Did Andrew Marr ask Boris Johnson about that today? Fuck no, he didn't. Of course he didn't, because he'd be doing his job. Prime Minister, listen, you're not answering the question about the necessity of lockdowns. You refuse to answer me, so I'm just going to accept or take that you haven't got a Scooby-Doo. I've asked you why cases continue to rise in Oldham and Manchester. You refuse to answer me. I'm taking it, and I'm sure my viewers are taking it, that you haven't a fucking notion. Let's move on. Why, down south, in places that are pretty wealthy, where I'm sure lots of your fucking mates have houses, where the cases are higher than they are in Oldham, why no lockdown there? Do you think Marr asked them that today? He didn't. And if you don't believe me, the Andrew Marr Show is on iTunes. It's on iPlayer. It's on the BBC iPlayer. You can watch it later on. Marr just sits there. Another open goal for the presenter. I would have annihilated Johnson this morning. He'd never have gone near the BBC again if I'd have had 15 minutes with him today. Never. Shocking, shocking revelations in the Sunday Times. Shocking. Where they live, these fuckers, no lockdown. More cases, no lockdown. And we'll come to the cases in a moment. These PCR tests and just how wretched they are. Because a BBC presenter did his job this morning. Oh yeah. Yeah. A PCR testing and the fallibility of PCR testing was raised on BBC Breakfast Television this morning. I know. I nearly died myself. We'll come back to it in a minute. Jesus wept. Oh. Then Boris Johnson, with Andrew Marr today, addresses Let It Rip, the idea of herd immunity.
You had several voices on your programme earlier, I was watching. You know, some suggesting we should basically let it rip.
No one said that.
Or that the lockdowns were inappropriate, let's put it that way. The lockdowns were, and that the restrictive measures were wrong. I just can't accept that. And as Prime Minister, I couldn't take a course that could expose us to tens of thousands more deaths in very short order. And, you know, we've got to continue.
Again, he says, I couldn't take a case that would expose us to tens of thousands of more deaths in short order. Guess what was in the Sun on Sunday? Scousers, listen. Look away now if you can't hear the Sun on Sunday. I totally understand it. Listen to this. Mentioned this book a minute ago by this guy Bauer, this biography of Johnson, right? This guy, Tom Bauer, he's written this book. It's being serialised in the Mail on Sunday. This guy features in the Sun on Sunday today because he has said, has this guy, that Boris Johnson and Matt Hancock were panicked into the national lockdown by Neil Ferguson. Remember this dickhead Neil Ferguson, Imperial College London, the guy who couldn't tell you what day it is? You wouldn't trust him to tell you the time in a room full of clocks. This Muppet who has a career history of modelling scenarios and outcomes, and he's always fucking wrong. Neil Ferguson. We were told early on, weren't we, back in March, that Neil Ferguson thought that 500,000 people might die. No, that was wrong. You know what he was telling Boris Johnson and Matt Hancock and Chris Whitty and Patrick Vallance? He was telling them that 1.5 million people might die. 1.5 million. The Sun on Sunday has called him a bonking boffin. A Muppet, right? This is the gambler, right? Bauer writes, this was an improvement on the 500,000 would die. On the 500,000 would die. Ferguson saying that his model shows that 500,000 would die. Bauer writes in his book, this was an improvement on Ferguson's earlier assessment. Between 2% and 3% would die, up to 1.5 million people. This is who they're listening to. And when Johnson waffles on today about if we open up society and try and achieve herd immunity, tens and tens of thousands of people will die, Marr should have pulled him up on that and said, well, what about all this Neil Ferguson stuff that's in the newspapers again today? But Andrew Marr doesn't. And don't think for a minute that his producer hasn't read that stuff. They have. But they're all in it together. So he's not going to ask him a single question.
You to bear down on this virus whilst protecting the economy. That's the balance we've got to strike. And yes, with great respect to some of the other voices that I heard on your show, we haven't actually had any people who attack not the policy, but the consequences of the policy
coming up.
Wow. I mean, this is astonishing. Johnson said to Marr just there, and you heard him, and this is on live television this morning, he said, we haven't had anybody who's come out and attacked the consequences of our policies at all. Lots of people are being critical, but nobody's offered an alternative. This is a stone-faced lie. Johnson must know this. He must have heard of Carl Hennigan. He must have heard of Sunetra Gupta at Oxford. Do you think Andrew Marr jumps in and says, hang on a second, we've actually had professors on this programme, fatty? No, he doesn't. Marr just keeps stum.
Any people who attack not the policy, but the consequences of the policy, we haven't had any alternative suggestions. Well, no one has come up with any better proposals that I'm aware of.
My God. And again, if you don't believe me, go and get the BBC iPlayer entire Marr show when you finish listening to this programme. My God. Johnson sits there and says, nobody's saying anything else that I'm aware of. Marr can just take him to the cleaners. He can take him to the cleaners and just sits there. Is it the stroke that he had? Am I being insensitive now to people who've had strokes? I couldn't give a fuck. The way things are going, I'm going to have a stroke myself before the end of the day. Hennigan is all he had to say. Sunetra Gupta is all he had to say. There have been many papers by scientists against the lockdown and against mask wearing. And instead of presenting the alternative, what does Marr do? He goes right back to the blame game. Who's to blame for spreading the virus?
Yesterday, you said that people up and down the country have become complacent and blasé during the summer. Can I put it to you that your government was paying us to go and eat out, which spread the virus, was telling us, ordering us to go back into the office, which spread the virus. And if anyone was complacent and blasé, it was you.
Well, look, I take full responsibility for everything that's happened since the pandemic began, of course. And the government, is trying, as I say, throughout this to strike a balance. We had to go into lockdown in March and April, and that was effective in bringing the virus down. I think it was right to reopen the economy. I think if we hadn't done that, Andrew, if we hadn't got things moving again in the summer, I mean, we would be looking at many more hundreds of thousands of jobs lost, billions, tens,
so
hundreds of billions
more gone
from the economy. And
Marr continues to argue with them about eat out to help out, and did you spread the virus, did you? When you gave people discounts at restaurants to get them back out, did you spread the virus? This is the level of the BBC. This is irrelevant now. Mad.
And I think it was right to support the economy, to put our arms around.
But we know that eat out to help out spread the virus.
Jesus
and
Christ, you're actually witnessing, you are listening. I've never heard it, I've never seen it so bad. You are witnessing a top tier presenter on massive money fail totally and completely to do the job he's paid to do. I mean, it's absolute vaudeville. And for the future then and all the vaccines?
You've talked about the vaccine and Matt Hancock's talk about the cavalry is coming. Is the cavalry coming this year?
Well, you've just ticked me off for trying to...
I'm just asking for a factual answer. Is the vaccine
coming
this
year? It's possible. It's possible that we will make significant progress on the vaccine this year. I went to see the scientists at AstraZeneca in Oxford, and those teams seem to be doing fantastically well.
But if it doesn't come this year, are we into
get people's hopes up on the vaccine unnecessarily? Because I think there's a good chance, but it is not certain.
And if it doesn't come, if the cavalry doesn't arrive, are we facing a yo-yo in and out of restrictions up and down this country, possibly for years to come?
Jesus Christ. You heard that, didn't you? Yeah?
I don't want to get people's hopes up on the vaccine unnecessarily, because I think there's a good chance, but it is not certain.
And if it doesn't come, if the cavalry doesn't arrive, are we facing a yo-yo in and out of restrictions up and down this country, possibly for years to come?
Unbelievable. Is this the future, is it? If we don't have the medicine, if we don't have vaccines, we'll be yo-yoing in and out of our houses and our jobs for years to come. You see, he's setting him up. There's a term, you know. Anybody who's ever worked in the media, softball questions. Marr is lobbing up softball questions for Johnson to knock out of the park. Well, are we going to be yo-yoing for the next few years?
No, I don't think that's going to happen. And if you talk to the scientists, they're all virtually unanimous that by the spring things will be radically different, and we'll be in a different world. And because that is the normal cycle of a pandemic like this. But I also think, if you look at where we are, that so many things are better. We have better treatments. We have dexamethasone, remdesivir, Regeneron, all these treatments that are now available that weren't a few months ago. That's changed the equation. We will find all sorts of ways, I'm absolutely sure, particularly through mass testing programs, of changing the way we tackle this virus. But for the moment, Andrew, to repeat my central message, we have to take the balanced approach that we are.
And at the same time, you are visibly and loudly losing the support of the very Tory MPs you most relied on in the past in the House of Commons and in the House of Lords, Steve Baker of the ERG. The consequences of taking away liberty to protect public health have been devastating to our society and economy by any standard. What do you say to him?
Well, I understand completely what Steve is saying, and nobody in my position wants to do any of the things that we've had to do. I'm a freedom-loving Tory. I don't want to have to impose measures like this. Are you crazy? I mean, you know, this is the last thing we want to do.
It doesn't get any better. That's all I'm going to subject you to in terms of Boris Johnson's appearance on the Andrew Marr Show this morning. This is the Richie Allen Radio Show. The time is 27 minutes to the top of the hour. Let's have a tune. When we come back, we look at some bad news. Well, from an economic point of view, terrible news this morning about jobs in this country, Cineworld. We'll hear about that in a moment. Before that, though, a tune. Why not?
Good technique, you know.
Music from Blur, Phil Daniels riffing there. Park Life on the Richie Allen Radio Show. Sunday View, live Sunday morning, October 4th, 2020. Welcome to the programme. If you're just joining me, good to have you on board. Bad news, economic news, bad jobs news this morning. Cineworld is going to close in the UK and Ireland, resulting in the loss of 5,500 jobs. Yeah. Have a listen to Anne Diamond, the broadcaster, speaking to Stephen Dixon, presenter on Sky News this morning. Bad news on the jobs front. It isn't just Cineworld either.
I mean, this just shows how COVID on this side of the Atlantic is still so badly affecting jobs and the way we live our lives, actually. And here you've got Britain's biggest cinema chain, Cineworld, which has 128 theatres throughout the country, is writing to the Prime Minister saying this is dire. And the reason that we've been catapulted into this crisis right now is because of the release of the latest Bond film, which was due to be, I think, this month. And the Bond producers have now decided to put it off at least until April because they're very spooked by how badly Tenet did, which is the big Christopher Nolan movie, which was expected to pull people back into the cinemas and didn't, frankly. And they're so spooked by that, and clearly they've invested an awful lot of money in this latest Bond movie, that they're deciding to put it off until hopefully they can fill theatres. The problem now is that, as Cineworld is saying to the Prime Minister, we're probably just going to have to close down completely and put 5,500 people out of work. It's a huge crisis, actually.
Mind you, it's worth pointing out Tenet was a rubbish film.
Why is it worth pointing out that Tenet was rubbish? What's that got to do with anything?
Film.
Yes.
Very controversial.
To be fair, I went to see that at Cineworld. I mean, it was very quiet when I went, but it was...
It was quiet when you went because people have had the bejesus scared out of them by the government. And because when cinemas were allowed to open again, every second aisle had to be empty, dickhead. It had nothing to do with the film being a good or a bad film. Shocking garbage by presenters on TV this morning.
It was such a huge disappointment because it had such a build-up. So in a sense, they didn't do the industry any favours with that because this, what was meant to be this great film, turned out to be awful.
Gets worse.
The whole experience of going to the movies must be very... I mean, I haven't been, actually, since lockdown. But it must be so different. It can't be as exciting or have the sort of atmosphere that you want when you go to a big movie in a big theatre.
No, but there's less of a queue for the popcorn. So every cloud, Dan, every cloud.
Yes, it's easy to say things like that when you're earning a couple of £100,000 a year to talk bollocks, eh? It's easy to say every cloud is a silver lining, not so much of a queue for the popcorn. Fuck the 5,500 people that are going to be on the dole, not knowing if there's anything out there for them. Lovely stuff, eh? Lovely stuff.
Renowned healer Mark Bajerski
travels the world to find the most unique and powerful crystals for self-healing. Since the ancient times, crystals have been used as healing tools. They hold a natural healing vibration and are highly charged in positive energy. Mark teaches how to channel the universal energy and transfer it to the crystal to activate its healing power. Each crystal is used for its unique ability to target a different physical or emotional challenge. Mark Bajerski is an author, healer, speaker, and founder of the Pure Energy Healing Academy. He shares powerful messages of inspiration and healing on his daily YouTube videos, reaching millions worldwide. Mark's crystals, healing oils, and incense sticks are most sought after by other healers. His collection is available online at www.markbajerski.com. His work is presented through Lemon House, a company that creates and curates consciously made gifts.
Welcome back to Sunday View. It is me, Richie Allen, the BBG. Good to be with you this Sunday. I think, at least around the northwest anyway, I think we've had the worst of the rain, at least for now. If you are planning on getting out there, I've just been looking at the forecast. It's a bit dull and a bit grim out there, but I think it's looking a bit better than yesterday. All righty. Thanks for your tweets, by the way. I appreciate them. William tweets, Richie, the hospitality and tourism industries are finished. I called it back in March, says William. You didn't have to be Nostradamus, William. But fair enough, pal, fair enough. Alan tweets, Richie, this has been done purposefully. The film industry is now geared towards the 50-inch HD LED screen. Cinema is ancient technology. That's how it's seen. Buy your films on Amazon, Netflix, etc. from now on, says Alan. Cheers, Alan. Hi to Angela. How you doing, Angela? Hi to John at JT The Game. How you doing, JT? Jason says, Richie, listening to Boris Johnson this morning, it made me think about that beach scene from Jaws, where people are just starting to go back into the water and Chief Brody starts waving his pistol around, shooting at an imaginary shark, causing the bathers to panic. Fantastic. Brilliant. That reminds me, Jason, every one of us knows somebody who's not great with trivia. Right? Very intelligent now. Very intelligent, but not great with trivia. We all know that somebody who jumbles up pop culture all the time. The Future Mrs. Allen is a wonderful example of it. I burst out laughing most days of the week. I don't know, she was reading a quiz in a magazine or something. I don't know what she was doing. And she said to me, that line, she said, we're going to need a bigger boat. Where does that come from? And I said, where do you think it comes from? She said, Titanic. Is that what light taller, is it? Is that what Fred said, the lookout, when he saw the iceberg coming at them out of the dark? We're going to need a bigger boat. Jaws, love, I said. It's fucking Jaws. Jesus Christ. Let's move on. I'm in great form, actually. Big story today. Listen to Gillian Joseph on Sky News. This is a big story. I saved it for last because it's important. I want to go out on a high. Something might come of this. I don't know. Maybe it will, maybe it won't. Gillian Joseph on Sky.
A record number of new daily cases of COVID-19 have been recorded in the UK. Nearly 13,000 people were classed as being diagnosed in the last 24 hours. But the government says a technical glitch may mean the real figure is smaller.
Well, 12,872 cases were reported across the country in the last 24 hours, and 49 people were shown to have died within 28 days of a positive test for COVID-19. That takes the total number of deaths so far to 42,317.
Lovely. So the numbers are all over the place. They're telling us that 13,000 people were diagnosed with COVID yesterday. Then they're saying that, oh, that's wrong. It's a lot less. So what's going on? Well, let's hear from Brandon Lewis. He's the Northern Ireland Secretary. What's going on? Sophie Ridge asks him.
On the testing, which, as you say, is a really important, you know, tool in our kit for trying to keep on top of the virus, a technical issue meant that 12,872 cases were added to the total yesterday.
Yep.
When you yourself acknowledge how important that is to work out where the virus is, where it's spreading, What went wrong?
Well, this is an issue between the 24th of September and the 1st of October. Those numbers have been put in as of yesterday, which is, as you say, has had that impact on the numbers. I would say, actually, this is a testament to how focused Department of Health, public...
He just waffles on. It's just bullshit. Oh, God. Yeah, so they're admitting that they're telling you one day 13,000 cases of COVID and it's probably a lot less. There's a glitch in the counting. Yeah. I wasn't jesting, by the way, when I mentioned it. I see a lot of you are finding it funny on Twitter there, the future Mrs. Allen. Good morning, Natalie. That's a true story. Yeah. From which film comes the classic line, we need a bigger boat? What do you think it is? Titanic, she says. But she's the sort of person, I've heard her before, going back many years. I do remember we were reminiscing in a group of people. It might have been in our Spain days. And we were reminiscing about television shows of yesteryear that we loved. And the French pretty much got everything that we got in Ireland in terms of American TV shows. So they got the same American TV shows, Columbo, Streets of San Francisco and all of that stuff. And I remember the future Mrs. Allen. Now, admittedly, it's kind of you had to be there. You had to have a few drinks to find this funny. But she piped up in the middle of this conversation and she said, well, she said, when I think back, we always loved Starsky and Lacey.
What kind of fuckery is this?
That's what I mean. That's what I mean. We all know those people. Pop culture, references. Starsky and Lacey, they missed the trick. They could have mashed up some of those shows. Cagney and Hutch. I don't know. Let's move on then. Right. The second part of that big story about cases and testing. Here it is. New research. This is in the Sunday Times, I think. Is it? This is very important. New research into the infectious potential of contaminated surfaces has forced a downgrading of early concerns that people might fall ill by touching a doorknob or a light switch. The surface issue has essentially gone away, according to Monica Gandhi, who's one of the most reputable specialists in infectious diseases in the United States. Now, this is very important, and this story has gotten lost this morning, right? We were warned about surfaces, weren't we? About the virus on surfaces. Sky News is still running ads telling us that we have to be careful about touching surfaces that other people have touched. According to the Sunday Times and Monica Gandhi, this might just be nonsense. This is important. Now, Fraser Nelson writes for The Spectator, doesn't he? He does indeed. And he was on the Andrew Marr show this morning reviewing the newspapers, and he wanted to talk about this very important story.
Yeah, this is a fascinating study, this one, saying that we have until now thought you could get virus from surfaces. Certainly anybody who's going into the office right now will see they're being wiped very carefully. Some school kids, for example, are being told their homework. Marked because the homework jotters might contain the virus. But now a University of California professor says this isn't really the case. It's not through surfaces, it's because of people. Now, if this is the case and the fears of contracting the virus from surfaces have been exaggerated, that means a lot of disruption has taken place which needn't have been the case. But more importantly, virus poses perhaps less of a threat than we had thought. Through services, through showing up in school, through showing up to work. So this is, of all the stories today, perhaps one of the ones that matters the most for people's everyday lives.
Of course it does.
Genuinely new news.
Genuinely new news, says Andrew Marr. I think it's time he retired, I think. Never been one for ageism. Don't like it. Think back to Sue Barker. Sue's the best broadcaster on the planet. They're getting rid of her from a question of sport. I'm sure she'll continue to do Wimbledon. Great. I'm not ageist, but Marr, he's been cracked upside the head too many times, I think. That is a huge story, but it isn't getting any, as I said, it's not getting any take-up around the UK media today. Now, this is important. I'm going to leave you with this. Listen up now. I mentioned at the top of the programme that a BBC presenter did his job today. This is good. This morning on BBC Breakfast Television, the British teachers who were trapped in Italy under quarantine because they kept testing positive for COVID. Remember them? Very important, this. Kept getting tested week after week after week, even though they were isolated. And the tests kept coming back positive. So they were kept in quarantine, in limbo, couldn't leave Italy, right? Right. After speaking to those students this morning, those teachers this morning, excuse me, the BBC spoke to a woman called Nigat Arif. Now, Nigat Arif is a GP, but she's also got a lot of information. She's also got some qualification in epidemiology. Listen to this. Very important. The most important thing you'd hear all day today. This is about PCR testing.
Why on earth is it happening that people are testing positive, the symptoms then go, they've isolated for a period of time, and yet the tests keep coming back positive? Let's talk to one of our...
Very important question, isn't it?
Breakfast GPs, Dr. Nihat Arif. Morning to you. So, yeah, one big question. Why do these positive tests keep on rolling through?
So it's important to understand how the test is done. So the test that Lily Rose and her mum Beverly are talking about is the PCR test, the polymerase chain reaction test. It's a swab that goes at the back of the nose and the throat, and we take some saliva. Then that swab is taken to the lab. They take what's known, they try and detect the RNA, which is a virus bit of the genetic material of the virus, by adding a reagent to it. And then once they add the reagent, that sort of the tester makes billions and billions and billions of copies of the RNA, and that lets then the pathologist, whoever's looking at the test, to know that this is a positive test. The World Health Organization and the Center of Disease Control actually a long time ago said that there are times when the test can actually come back positive even when the virus isn't alive anymore. So, for example, yeah, that's the difference. So I'll let you know. We've had this in the UK with multiple healthcare professionals. For example, nurses who I've known who've tested, who've had COVID-19, mm-hmm. the test came back positive, and then they want to come back to work, but we decided to test them again just to make sure that they're free of the virus. But then the test came back positive. And one nurse had six consecutive tests that came back positive.
And this is the real problem, isn't it? This is the crux of it, because if you're...
Are you listening to this now?
Crux of it, because if you're testing positive, but you're no longer contagious, whether it be the nurse you refer to, or Lily Rose, or the lads that we were hearing from, you're still holed up, but you're of no risk to anyone.
Yeah, so the theory is that...
This is massive now.
...that actually there are fragments of the test that are still left behind, but the test isn't... You know, no test is 100%, but the test will still come back positive. But those fragments are just little fragments, and it's not a live virus that you can pass on. So it's the difference between, is it a live virus that you can transmit, or is it a virus that's just lingering around? And how long it lingers around? Well, we're still looking at the studies of that.
This is massively important. Again, you won't hear anything more important today than what she just said there. And what she essentially did was repeated what Dr. Sucharit Bhakti said to me on Wednesday last, the co-author of COVID False Alarm, the epidemiologist based in Germany, renowned epidemiologist. He said the exact same thing. He described the PCR test as she did, and he described its failings as she did. And what she just basically said there was, millions and millions of Brits, people living in the UK, have had coronavirus 19, whatever it is. Right? I'm pretty sure whatever this is, if it exists, I'm pretty sure I had it. Millions of, the vast majority would be asymptomatic. Hardly felt it at all. But what she said there is, so you've had it, didn't do you any harm, built up the antibodies. You are likely to continue testing positive for the virus every time you subject yourself or submit yourself for a test. This is astonishing stuff. And if you take the Sunday Times today, if you take the Sun on Sunday, apologies, Scousers, I don't like it either. If you take the Mail on Sunday, and if you take the Andrew Marr Show and the Sophie Ridge programme, little bits, jumble them all up together, you get the true picture of what's really going on with this hoax. And for those of you who are cloth-eared bints or cloth-eared Muppets and you only hear what you want to hear, the pandemic is a hoax. I'm not saying there isn't a virus. The threat is a hoax. You put some of the articles in the press today, you put one or two of the interviews, put them together and you get a clear picture. This is tyranny. Listen again to what she says and listen carefully.
and the Centre of Disease Control actually a long time ago said that there are times when the test can actually come back positive even when the virus isn't alive anymore. So, for example, yeah, that's the difference.
This is massive.
So I'll let you know. We've had this in the UK with multiple healthcare professionals.
Multiple healthcare professionals. So think big now. Think big. Don't just think about somebody going for a test and getting a false positive. That's big. But this is really big. She says nurses keep testing positive. These are people who had the virus. Well, we're fucking doomed then, aren't we? It's no wonder they're finding thousands of cases a day. Most of these people don't have the virus. But maybe most of them did have the virus at one time or another. And as Dr. Vernon Coleman said, we've got all sorts of shit floating around our systems anyway. And Dr. Sucharit Bhakdi even, on Wednesday, explained how the tests will pick up this floating shit and debris and highlighted as a positive. This is big stuff.
For example, nurses who I've known who've tested, who've had COVID-19, mm-hmm. the test came back positive, and then they want to come back to work, but we decided to test them again just to make sure that they're free of the virus, but then the test came back positive. And one nurse had six consecutive tests that came back positive.
And this is the real problem, isn't it? This is the crux of it, because if you're testing positive, but you're no longer contagious...
Yes, those numbers are getting added to the daily figures, and it is the daily figures that are being used to justify the tyranny that we're living through. Make the connection. It isn't difficult. You don't have to be Alfred Einstein. Boom, boom. You don't have to be Albert Einstein. You know, if this thing is picking up traces of virus from somebody who had it weeks ago, months ago, and who's fine now, and who isn't transmitting anything, and if it's given a positive, if it's flashing red, and they're adding these numbers up every day, justifying lockdowns in Oldham and in Manchester, I mean, again, you don't have to be a genius, do you?
Whether it be the nurse you refer to, or Lily Rose, or the lads that we were hearing from, you're still holed up, but you have no risk to anyone.
Yes,
she says. You're holed up, but you're of no risk to anyone. Yes. And you keep testing positive. And remember, the moonshot plan. Johnson and Hancock want to normalise the idea of being tested for your health passport contained on your smartwatch or contained on your smartphone. They envisage a future, not just for the COVID thing, but a future full stop, where we are constantly testing ourselves to green light your health passport, to give you access to things. And they're admitting it on National Breakfast Television this morning that the test is not even flawed, not even redundant, but worthless. And that's the fairly shaky house of cards that this whole scam has been built upon. This PCR test. That's it from me today. I've had enough. I'm sure you've had enough as well. Back with you tomorrow, Monday. Yes. And I'll be joined at 5:30 on Monday tomorrow, as usual, by Dr. Vernon Coleman, who is continuing to upload An Old Man in a Chair on brandnewtube.com. That's where to find him. He'll be with me tomorrow. I will have another guest as well. Until then, it's bye from me. Enjoy the rest of your Sunday and look after yourselves and one another. Bye now.